Yeah, so the Rav Shitzer's wife, she was very frugal. So she made the kugel and all the food. She didn't want to put any, you know, they used the schmaltz, like the fat. She didn't want to put the fat on the, you know. Putting the fat on was like a you know, listen, cost money. Why can't you make it? Yeah, that's fat, so what? But she davened very long. She did very intense prayers. And she had like a cupboard which she hoarded all this stuff and she locked up her fat there. So absolutely every Friday when she's davening her beautiful long mincha, he walked off, sauntered over, opened her whatever she had, her zipper, where it was there, I don't know, or it was in her apron pocket, where he sort of flicked the keys out, opened the closet, sprinkled in liberal amounts of schmaltz, of the fat that was what made the stuff good, and then put the keys back. And every Shabbos she would say the same thing: we don't need schmaltz, it's Shabbos, that makes the food taste delicious. And he said, you're right, my sweet. It's the source of your tefillahs of my good deeds.
When my father-in-law was growing up in Poland, he left in 24, before the Holocaust, they would use schmaltz instead of butter on bread.
Huh. Everyone did. That was it.
Yeah.
It's not, yeah. We don't even understand it, never. Never. My great-grandfather, the doctor said to him, if you don't stop indulging in your bread with schmaltz and herring and your potatoes and your sour cream or whatever, those different dishes you like to eat, I don't know what to tell you. You're not going to last long. You're 45. He died at 48.
Wow.
You're 45. I think you can't. I mean, it's really clogging the arteries. It's really... But he said, what's this doctor, crazy? We would have done anything in Europe to get this food. It's available. I'm not going to eat it. He couldn't even, it was such a poverty mentality. He just didn't.
Well, also, you needed the calories for the schmaltz.
That was then, but then he had plenty here, and he overate it, apparently. So the doctor's saying, let go. It's not because it's only fatty food. He was having a little too much of it, or a lot too much of it. Shem Yazor, okay. So where are we up to? We are up to Tzav. Oh, Hashem. There we go. Oh, brachas. Ah, maybe we'll start to make good brachas. Who knows? Tough lamed beis aleph. So, first I'll read the sif. He says, before you do the bedikah, before you check, you make a bracha. Asher, can you show me mitzvah sa b'tzivanu? Oh, boy. Okay, maybe the first thing what we'll do is just review the general what a bracha is. Whenever I learn about what a bracha is, I on the one hand start to be very, you know, I feel very strongly. I really must start to make good brachas. On the other hand, I start to say, what happened to my brachas? Just suddenly evaporated again. Oh yeah, yeah. Okay, so what is a bracha? The Zohar explains that a bracha opens up all these storehouses on high, all these very precious places on high. This is the language of the Zohar or the later commentators. It's like it gives you the 100 keys to blessing, the 100 brachas or 100 keys to blessing. It's a very, very big opportunity. Every bracha. So it says Baruch alludes to opening up the wellsprings of spirituality above. That's why Beis of Baruch is Bina, Reish is Chachma, so you have Bina and Chachma, Vav is Das, Chaf is Keser. Bekitzur, it means you're getting to a place that's way above you. Okay, open this up. This is open. Very good. Then you have Ato. When you say Ato, you're speaking to Hashem. He's right here with you. You. So that means, when I say Ato, and I know that Hashem is letting me just speak to Him, it's right here. So I have to wake up my love for Hashem. It's Ahavas Hashem. That's Chesed Ahavas Hashem. And then we have Hashem, Yud-Kev-Kei. Yud-Kev-Kei is Dveikus. That's the Shem Abaya. Living in this second is Dveikus. Living in the second, you are connected to on high. And then you have Elokeinu. Elokeinu is Yir Shamayim. It's profound fear of heaven. It means, though, I want to lose this special opportunity to be connected to Hashem. I don't want to lose it. That's Elokeinu. Those are three. So the Zohar says, so then, Melech HaOlam, the person goes up. Melech HaOlam, you're supposed to go up. The I still remember my teacher showing us this very complicated Kabbalistic discussion of the four mitzvahs. You're supposed to take on these four, being willing to die for Hashem, whether it's beheading, whether it's burning, whether whatever it is, a different. And which letter of the Shem Hashem is this one, and which is that one? What do you access by each level? But he says this is just like a little bit of a. It's like a picture. It's like a, you know, it's like a little. It's not relevant to what you're really. This is not what you're doing. It's showing this very complex Kabbalistic things. This is not what you're really doing. What you're really doing is like the name of the Melchizedek and the Tefkatan. You picture a fire and you're willing to jump in. So that's what you're really supposed to be doing. Not the business of this and that. So that's not. Anyway, he's, I'm sure, really doing it. But so this idea of being willing, and Rav Nosson says, don't think that when the Ri says you're supposed to die for Hashem, that has to do with when you're about to leave the world. About to leave the world, check out. So where's the check out? He says, no, it means living with Mesiras Nefesh. You have to be willing to live with sacrificing. So what that does is it comes from the head and they say, okay, give him what he needs to have, what he wants, what he needs. So give him what he needs. Give him what he's asking for. And then we get to a totally different level of Asher, and then Kiddushanu, Mitzvosav, Betzivanu. So first of all, Asher, I mean, theoretically, we could have said the bracha, right? Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam, Kiddushanu Mitzvosav, Betzivanu, without Asher. Asher means that. We could just say, blessed are you, Hashem, our God, King of the Universe, sanctified us. Not who sanctified us, sanctified us. We were sanctified. Kiddushanu. Shekiddushanu. One word, we don't have to have this extra word. So, it's not by accident that the word Asher is the same letters as Osher, which means fortunate or wealth, because that's the next, we're again actually accessing this very high place, we're getting to a different, totally different level. That's what Asher is. And Asher is Rosh, you get to the head of the next place you can go, and then you have Kishalim, it's a sub, it's Ivana, we're bringing down, each word brings down a different or. That's basically, that's Bekitza, what a bracha of a mitzvah is, Bekitza. We saw with Megillah, we saw about what is exactly when. So that's what that's first of all, that's what the Ari says. And that's what every bracha is. Every bracha is an opportunity. I have a special opportunity to build my Yoshamayim. To build real, be real with Hashem. And if I don't use the opportunity properly, I squander it. Too bad. Why did I squander it? Why did I squander it? That's why it's like so chaval. 100 a day, you know, 100, you know, 100 strikes. Too bad. Why not try to do one good one, a few good ones? Try to. Not an easy thing. Not an easy thing. So now I'm going to see what the Makor Chaim says. Oh, what the Makor Chaim says. What does the Makor Chaim say? The Makor Chaim says, why do we need a bracha? That's what we were seeing yesterday. So what is a bracha about? I mean, I'm doing a mitzvah, right? I'm doing an action. I'm cleaning my house. Why do I have to... I'm searching my house, let's say. I cleaned it, now I'm searching. Why do I have to make a bracha? He says, the bracha causes that the action that I'm doing now, I'm making this action, it's complete. Because if not for the bracha, it could be that maybe I just feel like I'm searching my house. I don't know if I lost the diamond ring. I don't know, whatever I'm doing. It's not clear. So the bracha makes it that you have speech. Speech is completion because we have to have thought, speech, and deed. So I have deed. I have thought, hopefully. Hopefully I have thought. And then I have speech. That's what the bracha does. So the bracha makes it, brings down the holiness on my action. So that's why you're not supposed to interrupt. If you interrupt between the bracha and doing the thing, not to have to do it to mitzvah, you lose the bracha. Why lose the bracha? I said it. Why should I have to repeat it? He said, no, it has to be chal on the thing. It's causing a holiness to happen on my actions. So if I didn't even start, it has nothing to, it just disappears. And you start again. So that's A. He said, even in the middle, better not to interrupt. Why shouldn't I interrupt? I started. I had one. You want to keep as much as possible without interrupting. Interrupting, it's like it's harder to keep the original connection. So that's basically what he says about what a bracha is. That's how he explains. We don't begin to understand what a bracha does, though, because it's a tremendous spiritual illumination. And it also on us it causes tremendous spiritual illumination. Every bracha—that's what a bracha is. That's why it says What does Hashem want for you, except for that you should fear Hashem, which again does not mean to be afraid of getting slapped. That'll be upset. Because that's what Ramak says, and always says it's so important. If you're afraid, you say, I have a new sports car. If I'm not a good boy to God, God's going to take my sports car away. So you don't care about Hashem. You care about your sports car and about not getting a flat tire or whatever might happen to your car. So it's the same thing. So you're worried about the chitzonim. You're worried about the angels that make trouble, whatever it may be. That's what you're worried about. So you have to have a relationship with Hashem. So the year has to be, at least on some level, I don't want to be distant from Hashem. Even the lower year of being afraid of punishment. The main thing is, I don't want to be far from you, Hashem. Rabbi Nachman, it's an incredible thing. It's like unbelievable piece of the Tarachas. We can't do it really so much in depth now. But Rabbi Nachman said, there's 2 years, the Zohar says, each year of each year of each year. There's two different beginnings of year. There's year of fear of punishment, which again still means being afraid to be distant from Hashem. That's part of the fact. If I'm with Hashem, so then there's special providence around me. If not, I lose that. But that's not my point. My point is I want to be with Hashem. Then there's years of Rome was being afraid of Hashem on a totally different level. I don't care about the providence or not. I just want to be with Hashem. Like the person's just on fire for God. But Rabbi Nachman said, there's a third level of year. There's a different level of year. It's called, call it your lechaim, I guess, the language of the verse in Mishlei. It's Nosson maybe refers to it. He certainly applies it to that verse and that part of the verse. So, year lechaim, life for vitality, fear for vitality, vital fear with vitality. So, year lechaim, so Rav Nosson says, when you have real understanding, that what Yir Shamayim really, really means is that what I do now makes a difference. So, the moment a person says, I'm Hashem's right here. So you could take that right. You could take that wrong. You could say, oh my gosh, be careful. You're with the king. Hey, what are you doing? What are you thinking? Or you can say, wow, Hashem still cares about me. He's with me. It becomes, he said, real Yir Shamayim, like this third level that Rabbi Nachman revealed, Rabbi Nosson says, you can be Shol Tachtis. But it could be in the furthest, like the lowest level. The language the Rebbe uses. B'Shol Tachtis, U'mitachto. Rabbi Yaakov Meir Shechta points out. He says, in the lowest depths of the netherworld, and lower than that too. Not only the lowest, they dug deeper for him. That's where he is. And he has Yira, which is Ria. He starts to see, he says, no, it's not too late. I still need a Yir Shamayim. What I do still matters. They still want me to, you know, Rav Gudlevsky tells a beautiful story. He says about one, there was a certain Chassidusha Bacher. This Bacher was, said he was getting involved in Breslev, he was into things, got married, a month or two later disappeared. So I ran into him. I said, what happened to you? You were really enjoying things. You were into things. He said, well, they told me now that you're married, you need to start learning the Kuta Lechot. You need to learn what Rabbi Nosson, Rabbi Nosson teaches us. Learn that. He says, I started learning it. It's not for me. Why not? What's the problem? He said, it seems like Breslev wants to make everybody into a Rebbe. Everybody has to be a Rebbe. What do you mean? He said, what he's saying is, I don't care what you've done. I don't care what you haven't done. Every instant you're responsible to do your very, very best to serve Hashem, and there's no excuses. I don't know if I have koch. No matter what, no matter when, always, always, whatever I can do, I have to do no matter, like, that's what sounds like a Rebbe. Like, a Rebbe! You're a chassid, you know, you don't have to, like, work that hard. Like, that's kind of, like, a little too hard for me. So, Rebbe said, you got it right. That's exactly his message. But I don't agree with your, like, I don't think that you're right in trying to get out of it. I mean, that's the obligation of every Jew. It's not a Rebbe chassid thing. It just is. But that's exactly what he's saying. And that's what he's saying. You can be in the furthest place, I'm the worst person in the world, and you still know Yir Shamayim means Hashem still cares about me. I still have to, what I do now matters. Right now. Right now. Right now. No matter what I may have done a minute ago, a second ago, it doesn't make a difference. I have to serve Hashem now. That's the message. That's what Yir is about. So, the or.
I've heard that before.
That's what.
I've heard that before. That's a criticism of Rabbi Arush. I've heard that.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Rabbi Nachman says it. I'll tell you.
He wants to make everybody a holy person.
It's a nothing. It's a blessing. It's a nothing. Tov. You're fanatic. I'm just kidding. I'm
kidding. I'm
Yes, no, Avad. Yes, you're right. You're right. That's what Hashem wants.
Roman brings it too.
Everyone brings it. It's a pleasure. You're right. No, you're right. You are totally right. There's no denying. You're 100% right. But unfortunately, people who are saying this criticism don't care. Just like this chassid didn't care either. It's not because he's Haredi or not Haredi. It just is. What I have, I mean, I'm going to have fun in life. We have to have fun. That's what fun is about. Like,
they have agenda.
About. Yeah, whatever. Unfortunately, they don't. They don't even know what fun is. That's the problem. No. But if he knew what fun is, he would start to learn Torah, learn deeper things, try to do mitzvahs. Then you understand, like the Baditchever, they told the Baditchever, the parrots, the nobleman, the noble nobleman, he wanted to sleigh. He loves to be on his sled and sling around. So there's no snow. It's the summer or it's autumn. So he made them have piles of sugar. Piles. It was so expensive to do that. And he's there, he is with his sled slaying down. Mm-hmm. And he loves it. He's thrilled. He is laughing like a child. So the Baditchever said, what does he know about joy? Did he ever take a little banestic in his hand? You know, filling. He doesn't know what joy is. No. Like a little 5-year-old. What does he know? Like, that's really how we have to feel at every mitzvah we have, which we're working on. I hope Hashem will help one day. At least in the learning, at least something. So that's a little bit about a bracha. So every bracha is an opportunity to get this Yiras Shamayim. Every bracha. The 100 brachas gives it to us. These 100 brachas gives it to us. We just have to try to pay attention to what we're saying. I hope Hashem will help us. So that's the first sif. That was sif. Hey, right? I'm in the middle of it, though. Fine. Because the bedikah why do we say albir chametz, destroying the chametz? Because the bedikah, the purpose of searching is to destroy. That's the purpose. I want to search in order to destroy the chametz. And that's part of it. Even though this mitzvah comes only from time to time, you still don't make a shechion on it. It's not clear, though. So it's better to wear a new garment or something to this effect, to new prut. And say, I'm doing shechion also on the mitzvah. That already, I don't even think the Mishnah Berurah brings it. Some do, some don't. I think it's from the Kappachai.
You can Leil Sidik, retroactively,
can we
have mine?
No.
And
no.
Definitely
not. No, has to be honest.
Isn't sometimes we do that?
No, but you're right, though. You're right. Part of the problem of the question is, what do you mean? You do a Shechiyonu, like you do one Shechiyonu on the Pesach, finished. This is preparing for Pesach. It's also getting rid of something that's going to be an Avera. It's not so clear. It's definitely not a clear thing. Yeah. So if other people are searching with him, he makes the bracha, and they have in mind to be discharged obligation, and they should not speak between the bracha and starting the bedika. If you did, in a way that has nothing to do with the bedika, you have to go back, as I said before. It's better not to speak at all until you finish the bedika. And first, you should put the chametz that you need away and put something on it so it shouldn't disappear. You don't want your cat to move your. Whatever is like, that's the chametz cat food. No, and you're in big trouble, and you have to check the whole house again because all question who knows where, and it's like a whole problem. It's like a really those are the problems.
Unless the cat can talk.
There are actually a whole slew of questions in the Gemara about mice and I think cats too. About he took a piece of matzah and took a piece of chametz and he took a mouse in with him. The mouse had a piece of. Chametz, like a different old questions. Which house did it go in? There were two. One had matzah, one had chametz. I had piles of stuff, and I was like arranging it. And these creatures came. One took the other. I don't know where they are. And do I check my house? Do you check your house? We're right next door. What do we do? That's a whole question. The Shulchan Aruch is like just check the Torah. I don't want to get into it because it's so unusual. But like it's like Shulchan Aruch goes to all of them. This case and that case. I don't even think the Mishnah Berurah does it. He just, like, again, also just, like, circumvents it. It's too complicated. But it's like, you don't want to lose your chametz. So, basically, first of all, we have to know the obvious lesson here. That's what Scheinberg would always say, and it's very true. It's important this idea is that whether or not you're obligated to make a Shechiyanu, you might not be obligated to make a Shechiyanu. You might not have to. And you can put on a new garment. Maybe you don't have to do that either, but you have to feel so appreciative and thankful. Thank you so much, another B'dikas Chametz. Thank you so much, Hashem. That you really should feel. And like Ravarish is always saying, half hour at least, of thanking Hashem every day. At least before B'dikas Chametz, thank Hashem. Like something. So that's number one. And then we're trying very much to search out the Chametz. I want to find the Chametz. Where is the Chametz? Get rid of it. Okay, we're up to Vav. The custom is that, yeah, this was the custom back then. When you did the B'dikas, they would bring a plate for the bread that they would put into it when they found it. And had a knife there to be able to check in different crevices and cracks. Some people put 10 pieces of bread in different corners. It could be the plate had bread. It's possible to put bread. They find, I think. I don't think the plate had bread. So you put 10 pieces of chametz. That is our custom. Some people say that you shouldn't. The Taz, he said, what are you, nuts? You lose one and you chametzized your house after working so hard. Not so clever. So today, of course, one writes a list of where it is. That's if you're smart. The Mishnah Berurah actually brings from the Emek Halacha, I think. He says, you know, because we clean so well, if you don't put these little pieces of bread, you might not be allowed to make any kind of bracha. I mean, it's not quite so simple. Mm-hmm. It's not so simple. I mean, no. Others would argue, but it's not. It's in a way, you put the bread, you're okay. The Taz of time, they didn't. They had cracks and crevices. It was more likely that a person would find something. Today, it's not so easy. Although, unfortunately, it does happen. But houses that don't have chametz for who knows how long, and they're so careful. The more careful one is about cleaning, the less likely it is that he can rely on not putting the 10 pieces. And yes, write down.
Oh, here we go. Excellent.
Write down where the pieces are. Okay.
Each piece should be less kazayas, to be safe.
Definitely. Yeah, as Eshtet, yes. And I forgot to say that. And yes, that's true. Don't have a kazayas in your house. Although, unfortunately, it doesn't help too much because Mr. Brewer says, if you have less than a kazayas, do you have to eradicate it from the Torah or not? Are you over on Bayir or Bayimatsi or not? Can you have it? He brings these, say this way, these say that way, and he's like, he doesn't come out with any clear, like, it's okay. He doesn't say it's okay. Chazni says it's not okay, and Mishbu is like, well, there's this one, there's that one. It's not thrilling to leave a crumb and know you have a crumb in your house. It's not so good. You probably have to check again, unfortunately. So that's the end of the. Now, of course, the Chazon Ish did say, I mean, that's for sure, the Chazon Ish, they found something. He said, who knows, if you have to check, you have to check thoroughly, because who knows what might be.
That brings up an interesting issue. When Pesach is Motzi Shabbos.
Check on Friday. And yeah, you have a problem. Just be very careful what you do with all that bread. Who knows what you're having early Shabbos day, which is a big problem.
For that, people use pitos.
Yeah, pitot, and boy, are we careful, because yeah. It's like, it's not the, you can't do too much more, you're in trouble, you're like, ah, it's a problem. A lot of people eat outside, they eat by friends, even Shabbos and Gadol, we already eat by friends, that's the last year, maybe this year too, it's just easier, I don't want to, you know, one place, and then one place to clean, and goodbye.
What if you have a special needs child, and they look at chometz is a game. Their game is like, I'm going to hide the chometz, you won't find it.
Oh, boy.
And you're like cleaning for Pesach, and you don't find it, because they're good. So you might clean their room, but you won't find their chometz.
Okay, there's two questions involving your question. Question number one, how do I communicate to this child that, you know, we want to get rid of the chometz in a way that they're going to understand? That's not an easy question to answer. I actually just read, my wife sent me this amazing article about the New York Times about these children, this child and children who were communicated with through Disney World movies, Disney movies, and the kid like developed, even though he had serious, serious trouble. And he somehow got somewhere really great, and all the therapists involved, these people, you know, they worked hard. And they did what they did, and they were like, all the therapists were like, we can't believe this should not be working. But it was working somehow. So I don't know the specialized way of, and they would never have recommended such a thing. He said, Adrab, we used to like Disney, so we continue liking Disney. So, and it was very heartbreaking, but the kid was, he's very much more developed because of it. And they had a whole hook in his special college, wherever he was, the whole kind of group for everyone to develop. So I don't really know, like in terms of how to communicate with the child. I wish I had a good answer. I don't have a good answer. We have to do our best. Try to find the chametz, whatever way we can, any way we can. And, you know, there's a famous story with, I forgot who it was. He started to really work hard. This year, no chametz. That's it. And they were unbelievable all day, every day, get rid of the chametz. And he's sitting at the Seder table. and they bring the soup, and it's obviously bread. He's like, oh my gosh, he's devastated. He's like working so hard, and the Seder night he gets a piece of bread and his soup. I mean, like, come on, what's this about? So his mama, she went to bed, he got a dream. And he said, listen, you didn't pray. You didn't say a word of prayer. You just, like, you're in trouble. Well, what did I show you? There was a bird, brought the hummus in, no problem. No problem at all. You're not in charge. You just do your best. And that's what the Gemara says. The Gemara says, how can we be sure that maybe we need to clean the city, the whole city from hummus to be sure that there's hummus in the city. Can come in. Somebody can come in from the city. I mean, there are animals going around. There are huldos. There are whatever these animals of what may be. You know, we know about today cats, and about whatever they may be, or weasels. Who knows? Whatever was dragging around, or mice, or whatever. And they go into one's house, and they bring whatever they bring. It used to be that it was endemic. People used to they used to suffer from these creatures. Like, it was impossible. It was really hard. It was obvious that it was really hard. They really, wow, the mice were like impossible.
Oh, they are definitely impossible.
It says in any house you have to put the chametz up and hang it so mice can't get to it. It was obvious that there are mice, and it's obvious that they would get to it unless you take proper safeguards. And people didn't even bother. So the chametz you have to.
It's okay to hang bread. It's okay to hang bread.
In
this situation,
you're right. The Rashbam in Pesachim explains the Gemara there that hanging bread is kosher le'anius. It can cause the poverty. And the Gemara says that doesn't necessarily mean money. It just might mean in your mind, which is maybe worse. Hopefully, the person realizes that's worse. But so there's the whole question: how do kids do in a cheder? What do you mean? They hang their bags. So Vayashu said it says a sack. It's not a school tick. It's different. I mean, whatever. It's its own question. But yes, that is an exception. That's what it says. There's an exception to that rule. That's
and your other children, aside from the special child, can have one of the children play the game with them.
No, it's the opposite, though.
And that way, the child.
Ah, I see. I'm sorry.
The normal child knows. Where he hid it, because they're working together as part of the game.
He's willing. I mean, sometimes, it could be. Very often it could be the child wants more attention. This is a good way to get it. But it's not so easy. Like, it's not so easy to, I don't think there's any one answer. This is the way. You know, you have to, the main thing is definitely prayer. Yeah, that's the main thing. And that's not only for anyone special, child in their house, it's anybody. Because without prayer, we bring the chametz in on our shoes.
You can have a child who says, Pesach is your holiday, it's not my holiday.
It can happen.
You're going to have a child like that too. So
that's another story.
Yeah. So it's like.
In a way, it's a harder story. In a way, it's a much harder story. That's worse. But, so what do you do then? That's harder. That's even harder. Yeah. Then I have even less of an answer. That's it. You know, like a depends on the kid.
Well, I heard Rabbi answer all these questions. He always said the same thing. You're doing the best you can.
No, that's for sure.
You do the best you can. You can't. You're not going to be perfect. Just say in your mind, I cannot be perfect with this child, with whatever his actions are, and you have to pray to Hashem and say, please forgive me. I'm doing the best I can, but I know I can't be perfect with this.
Absolutely true. No, undoubtedly. Undoubtedly. And yeah, it's not your problem so much. Do your best. You don't have to. That's for sure true. There's something you don't have. You have no. There's no way to control it. And
we had an issue that I think was covered a few days ago, where you have guests over or you're holding a Seder, community Seder, and you know right after the meal people leave.
I've had that happen, and I have a very clear answer. Have a great holiday, everything should be good, you know. I don't even ask people to bench necessarily. It depends if I think that it's going to insult them. You can do it in a good way, maybe, if they know the language, they're willing. But, like, I'm not going to. Excellent, they have a half a Seder, unbelievable. And they can feel like, okay, this crazy Meshuggah is doing longer, we don't have to, we're free when we want to be, even that's even maybe even better. That I'm not judging anybody. Like, that's, you have to be very careful not to push someone away. They asked Rabbi Victor Nevinzal, said, you know, you're not allowed to give a Jew food who won't make a bracha. And this is a big problem for having guests who don't keep Shabbos or Yom Tov, don't know anything. They don't know to make a bracha. They're not even aware of bracha, but I don't give them food. So this person asked him a question like this. I'm in the army. My fellow soldier says, pass the potatoes. I know he's going to eat it without a bracha now. He hasn't had potatoes yet. why am I allowed to pass them to him if the Shulchan Aruch says you're not allowed to give a Jew food who's not having a kippurah? So he gave a very strong answer. He said, because if your friend doesn't get those potatoes from you, he's going to violate the prohibition of you shall not hate your brother in your heart. And you're not allowed to be gorim, you're not allowed to cause it to him because he doesn't understand about a bracha. So you pass him those potatoes. They're talking about someone. I'm asking, you have a way of getting around it. I mean, listen, in Israel, very often, if a person already knows enough, it's like very strange. You can say, well, maybe, if you know how to say it, it's a way of saying it in a way that's not, it's very pleasant. Like, don't forget to make a bracha. So, wait, tell me. Always, sometimes, if you know, you have to figure out who you're dealing with. And if the person's open to it, he's open to it. Even if he doesn't always make a bracha, it'll be like mechma. It's already being sweet and being.
Mean to the fact that he asked you to pass the potatoes.
Maybe. But you have to know who the person is.
Also, a couple of things. One, the Chazamish, in his days, already said that most of the Jews are to the Chazamish Ba'u. Nothing to expect of them. And what the Shulchan Aruch spoke about, people who knew something. They didn't have what they had today.
Absolutely.
So with the Tanakh Shishba, there's no Kabbalah that of Shemayim because you give them something.
No, the question is something different. You're totally right. I like the other answer better, although that's true, and that Rishon Zalman Orbach says. And that's true, 100%. He brings that, he said, this idea. The problem with that is, that's what if the guy is like, he's not a Tinik Shnishba. What if, and the question is, how do you define Tinik Shnishba? It's a big question. Okay, Tinik Shnishba, sorry.
A captured child. Question.
Yes. Tinik Shnishba means a captured child. Someone's child was kidnapped as a baby and raised with non-Jews. So the Rambam says, like, what are you supposed to do with him? You can't expect him to know anything or understand anything. And you have to give him a lot of love and patience until hopefully he comes to it on his own, because you can't force him. So the post can bring that very often if someone is raised without any knowledge of Jewishness, Judaism, he's in the same category.
Raised against.
Or even worse, against. Yes.
Most Jews in this country these days are raised against, not just without knowledge, they're raised
against.
There
are a lot of them. Yes, it's true. I think it depends for Ashkenazi, though. Depends, Sephardim and Ashkenazi. Sephardim, not so much raised against. Ashkenazim, Ashkenazim, a lot are.
Yeah.
And it's sad. It's sad, but true.
And even in the States.
Yeah. Yeah, there are those. It's true. Yeah. These guys are crazy.
The other thing is, what I also heard, two more ideas. You pass the potatoes. You're not saying, give them to him his hand to eat. You put it on the side of the table. He takes nothing to eat. So it's his problem.
You're right there as well. Okay. That there are many ways it may not be lifnei iver, also because another person could pass it. And even if not, is he eating it or not? It says you can't give him food. It's not my food to give him or not give him. There are many ways of answering. I like his answer better because it's very powerful and applies even to someone who hates. It's his fault, let's say. So what I was trying to say before, there are many, there's a dispute in the poskim. What is a Tinik Shnishba? I mean, Rav Yosef Yitzchak of Chabad, he spent his first Shabbos in Chicago, I don't know, how long ago was it? Maybe the 1950s, I'm not sure. Maybe earlier, I'm not certain. So he was his first Shabbos in Chicago. He walks over, like Chabadnikim everywhere, of course he's a Rebbe, he knows if you're Jewish, and he knows if you put on tefillin. That's just the way it is. So, some guy walks past him, bustling by. He says, "My dear friend, would you like to put on tefillin?" So he's caught, right? Jewish. He knows he's Jewish. Knows he didn't put on tefillin. So he said, "Rabbi, I'm a shona uporish." That's another halachic definition. Someone who learned and separated himself from the Torah. I'm not even like from your perspective. I have nothing to do with tefillin. I mean, I have to do tshuva first, and I'm not doing tshuva. So why should I put on tefillin? He said, "You call yourself a Shona Uparish? You can't be a Shona Uparish unless you really, really learned. Your learning was not Shona Uparish. You learned a little. Well, that's great. But why not put on tefillin? you didn't learn like, you're not a..." So many people hold that, like Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Yosher Ber Soloveitchik from America, he held that unless you really felt the sweetness of Torah and you were on a high-level learner, I don't care if you went to cheder yeshiva; that has no meaning. You didn't; it never really took for you, so it wasn't really maturely part of you. He's also a Tinik Shnishba. The culture swept him out. It's just like being kidnapped. There's the cultural mores that just didn't let him develop. I mean, famously, I heard this beautiful, beautiful thing. What's his name? Israelite. There's a place called Israelite in the Old City. Rabbi David, maybe? Yeah, Rabbi David. He said a beautiful thing to a famous actor. William. Shatner. Yeah, famous.
Shatner.
Yeah, he was in Star Trek. That's right. He said a famous thing. When I think the two of them were together. If I'm making a mistake with the person, I apologize. Yeah, exactly. So the two of them were together, and they're walking. And he said, "Listen, Rabbi. I mean, I don't know what to tell you, but like this whole religious business. I mean, when I was 14, I already was. I jettisoned the whole business. I didn't think it was for me. Why should I reevaluate now?" So he said, "Let me ask you a question. When you were 14, you had certain ideas of love and romance and it, having a relationship with someone. Did they stay the same now that you're evolved?" He said, "Oh no, they were very mature. They were hopelessly mature. So why do you think religion is any different?" So when a person's 14, 15, 16, and he's like in his little immaturity, and he doesn't really get it, so it could be he's also too traditional. You know, this is not so simple. The Chazon Ish's definition is not as clear as one would think, although most posts can bring it like you're saying. There's a letter, Rav Yashar brings a letter, he has his own way of looking at it, it's very interesting, but it's its own discussion, has nothing to do with now. But anyway, for sure the most poskim, like, and I mean all the students of Rav Chazon Ish, which is Rav Yitzchak Karel, Rav Chaim Knievsky, Rav Vosner, whoever you want to go with, all of those poskim go with his definition until the end, like he says in the Sefer Chazon Ish, not like that letter that the Chazon Ish contests, what does this mean, wait a minute, so then how does this work with this, it must be X, Y, and Z. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach also very much went with this very strongly. And most people, that's what we do.
Rav Chaim
Biskra had a whole his own way of looking at things, which is also true. The question is, what does it mean in terms of how do we work out in terms of observance? I mean, the whole enterprise of Kiruv is very much based on the Tanik Shnishpa model, because you need a wake the person up and help them out. It's not really him. It's earlier things. It has nothing to do with him. You know, they wanted to reform the people who were becoming reform or anti-religion during Rav Chaim Brisker's time. They wanted to say, we wanted to do something drastic to get these guys like get with it. It was like they had some. It was a big test for people. Do they do things one way, do things the other way? It's like it's unbelievable how many times it comes again and again. They keep saying, "Oh no, we're attending to Torah, but we'll change this, we'll change that, we'll change the other thing. We're not going to talk to anybody big. We're just going to do our own thing." And how much that these people are all goodbye, they're all assimilated and gone. And then the next phase does it. The next phase, and the next phase, and the next phase. It's unbelievable how many just keeps going. You feel like you're in waves, and then next wave, and next wave. It's expected. So, how do we get these guys to do what we want them to do? So all the moels, all the people who would perform a bris, a kosher bris, were religious on the faithful camp, as it were. In the faithful camp, as it were. They weren't the reform camp then. So we're going to say, no bris for your child if you don't want to keep Torah. So there were a few rabbis there. They were all okay with it. The biggest rabbi, Rav Chaim Brisker, said, "What? No way. Why not? It'll keep some people from," because it was a very big temptation, going off. He said, "What did the child do to deserve not to have a bris? You can't take away his opportunity to have a bris because his parents are acting foolishly. So if you want an amendment, maybe you say you can't be buried in a Jewish cemetery. If you're okay, I could hear that. You're penalizing the parents, maybe, but you can't penalize a child. We don't find anywhere that halakhically you have the right to do that. There's no stigma on this kid. You can't. He's an innocent child. However, he'll be raised. It's nothing to do with anything."
Also, without a brick, you have less chance or hard for him to do tshuva.
That's a different point, and that's also a true point. That reminds me of a story. Tell an unbelievable story. So Zilberstein tells the story of this Russian immigrant. He was from, I think he might have been from America, I'm not sure. But he was an immigrant. He came to Israel, and he told the surgeon he had a certain problem, they have to do a little surgery. And the surgeon, like, he's checking him over before he does the surgery in a sensitive place, and he sees he has no bris. So he gets this idea. He calls his Zilberstein. He's like, "Can I, halakhically speaking, I'm not asking to take responsibility or anything, but like, if I want, I think this guy's a nice guy and I want to help him, can I just do a bris on him?" while I'm doing the surgery? How does it work? She said, you know, you can go to jail for doing a business alone if they don't give you permission. Like, you can't just, you better get this right. That's your responsibility. I can't tell you what to do. I said, but, halakhically speaking, I can't tell you it's absolutely forbidden for you. I can't tell you you're doing a prohibition. He has to have a bris. He doesn't know better. He doesn't know better, but he needs a bris. So I can't tell you it's awesome. I can't tell you you're not allowed to. I'm not recommending it. I mean, you're doing something the person could take, like, he can literally take you to court for. You can get in big trouble for it. I mean, you know, you're making a choice for him. You haven't got the right to do that legally. And many people take a big issue with it. I mean, people will be very upset about it. Maybe it's for his benefit. He doesn't see that, though. How are you going to explain it to him? It's for your benefit. How are you talking to him? Anyway, somebody, first of all, you have to do the surgery not before the bris. If you do the surgery before the bris, even if it's minor, it's a shiloh, it's a question of maybe weakens him too much, you can't do the bris. You do the bris first, and you evaluate. It's a doctor. He's allowed to have the surgery. You can do the surgery. That's for sure. And listen, you're daven to Hashem. I don't know what to tell you. I can't tell you that can't take responsibility for this one. This is like a big job. But he spoke with this person, and he seemed to be a very good person. And he decided he's going to just do it. Again, I don't know I don't know what he would have. I would have recognized it. I thought maybe the guy's a little bit crazy. But nobody was asking. He wasn't exactly asking. He was just asking technical questions. And luckily, if he'd let, he had a feeling he was going to do it. So he made it to Prince, and he let him know. You know, by the way, you know, you should know. He said, there's a nurse maybe or someone else to tell him, you know, you have a Prince now. He said, now I understand. I feel such love for God, and I didn't know why. I feel something so special. Now I understand. If you made me a brief meal, okay. So my parents, you know, they were communists. They had no particular. Why should they? But he was very interesting. But again, I don't recommend. This is not the bottom line of things that recommending people. There's a different story with Rimitzer. Oh, the Rimitzer. The Rimitzer would go in Russia. He would go after people and try to do bris on people, on children, try to convince them to do bris on a child. So one time, there was this young man who was he was a rock star in Russia. Again, what does that mean? Not like maybe in America, but he was a rock star, a big guitarist or whatever he was. And he did this really powerful tshuva. He really, really, really became religious and on fire. And so he told his aunt, you know, it's really strange. None of our family did tshuva. And I just really, I don't know what it was. I really got this light. My aunt, I think, was also, said, oh, you don't know why it's with the Rimitzer. He came to give you a bris. He would come and try to convince people to give a bris. So he said, you were born. He knocked on the door. He said, listen, I'd like to give a bris to your child. He gave a whole spiel about a bris. And the father said, we are good communists. We do not want a bris for our child. I respect you, you're an elderly rabbi, and I have a lot of respect for your experience, but we don't want this. Okay. Eighth day, he knocks again, he explains it the eighth day, and he says, listen, rabbi, I told you already, we respect you as an older person, but we're good communists, we don't want a bris. He said, okay, can I at least hold the baby? Good, you're an older person. Well, what's he going to do? He's going to pull out, flip it, whip out a... is that one, give him a bris? I mean, not likely, right? So, you know, they gave him the child. And he held you for 10 minutes and cried. Just cried. He says, not a wonder that you did such a strong tshuva. So that may be the more appropriate. I don't know what to be on level to. I know how to do what. But it's not so simple. Anyway, so where are we up to? We are up to Vav. Okay, I'm in the middle of this. Well, I have no idea how we got here. I'm sure there's some way. Okay, Be'ez Hashem. Right. So they used to have these 10 things of chametz. In Baghdad, they used to put a little salt in the plate. He says, why salt? He says, because B'dikas chametz is a very powerful mitzvah, and the other side has a lot of jealousy for this mitzvah. Doesn't like this mitzvah. So just like we put the salt on the table to shut them up, we put the salt on the on the tray we carry around as a good sign.
But we should put salt directly on the table, put in a plate. Because Zohar brings the salt that's put on the table causes vikuchim, arguments on the machlokot at the table.
That's interesting. I never saw that. I don't think. Maybe I read the Zohar and one out the other. It's possible.
Now, when you put the bread board away after cutting the challah, mm-hmm. and the crumbs fall on the tablecloth. Mm-hmm. And what about and salt falling on the tablecloth? Is that okay?
Put the salt in a plate. A salt dish. Must have either a salt dish or on the plate that the person is doing it. That we don't have that problem.
Okay.
So we're saying you should. I know people. Some people put it in the plate, and I'd like to look that up. That sounds very interesting. It's certainly not in halachic places. It wasn't. Although maybe Kaf HaChaim brings it. Ugh, I should probably remember the Kaf HaChaim there, but I don't. Oh well.
There's also special plates just for the salt.
I've seen people. Now I understand that you're saying Peter Zohar. It could be. I have to look. That's very, very. I found it fascinating. I will look lead at it. It's certainly interesting. Thank you for the aura. It's a good aura. So he said, it's a simen, it's a good sign that we should live a long life. Salt lasts a long time.
Mm-hmm.
We should check every year. Fine.
Also, every korban had to have salt.
Yes, exactly. Precisely. When Menachem says salt sweetens. Salt sweetens. He said, every day, every person has to have some pain, and the salt is what sweetens it. The salt is the teachings of the tzaddik, the beginning of the great people who tell us how to live real lives. Really live. We want to really live. We don't want to live a life that's not full, that's not real. We want to live a full life. I want to really live. I want to have a real life. Hashem, help me have a real life. So that's this inyan. Now, in terms of the salt, So checking the chametz, there's a lot of kitrug. Very, very difficult to really find myself, to really get to a place where I'm searching out the bad. I want to find the good, and I want to search out the bad and get rid of the bad. How do I do that? That's something which the other side accuses a lot about. There's a problem. We have these accusers are not interested. They're just not interested in our finding the negative and changing ourselves. So how do I... The first thing I need to do in order to search out the minus and change it is get to that salt. That's the very first thing I need to do. Which is the realization that every good thing I do is forever. That's what Makor Chaim says. You're salting it away, putting it aside, first of all. Second of all, the Avodah Shisrael of Kodesh says we put out ten pieces. The Shlach Kodesh says, because it represents the ten negative, using of the ten powers each person has incorrectly. That's first of all. But second of all, the second thing, the Avodah Shisrael is a beautiful thing. Is we put out the Chametz because if you're searching for the bad in yourself, if I'm looking, where am I going to finally find the bad in me? When am I going to finally change myself? Is it if you think that after searching, you've cleaned your house, and it's really pristine, now it's immaculate, there's nothing here, you have no connection to being real at all. So we put down, we say, I know there's more, don't worry, even if I don't find anything, I know there is, I haven't found, it's not a problem, but I know there's more, and I hope, slowly but surely, I'll get over my problems. That's the Kodesh Demagogy, but we put the chametz in because we know to begin with, there's plenty here. Will I find? Won't I find? Okay, it's a different question, but there's plenty here. That's an important thing to be aware of. Kilo has to clean. That's from the garage. From clean. Forget about it. I'm just doing my best. After checking, the first thing you do is nullify. Nullify. You make a bittul. So I'm being mevatel the chametz. Should say any chametz that I didn't see should be nullified and should be like dirt on the ground. You have to know that this word chamira includes also leaven and also any kind of chametz, also yeast. And you have to know that also the bittul is that I'm saying it's hefker. It's not that you know, the Mishnah Berurah brings, the Poskim bring, there were some ignoramuses that thought they were saying some pretty little prayer. So it doesn't work that way. You have to say, I don't want chametz. Because the way chametz works, see, this is a very beautiful idea. How does chametz work? Chametz, the Torah says, is not yours. It's not yours. The minute Pesach comes, it becomes nothing for a Jew. But the Torah made it as if it's mine to violate the prohibition. I'm violating the prohibition. This is ilu, it's mine. Instead of with the pit, I go into the public domain, I dig a pit. Someone falls in. He says, you know, there's certain things you're obligated on in the pit in the public domain. I say, what do you mean? It's not mine. I didn't do anything. You're falling down. So he says, listen, I'm sorry. You're right, it's not yours. The Torah made it as if it's yours so that you have to pay whatever you do, the payments you need to pay. That's how it works. There are halachas, but don't. What do you pay? What don't you pay? Fine. But I can't just like get out of it because it's not mine. It doesn't matter. Chametz is the same way. So bittul means a person says, this chametz, I don't want it. I'm putting it out of my heart.
No.
I don't care about it. I'm not interested in it. That's what chametz is about. I don't want this chametz. This is not. And then it's as if it's nullified. So we're worried, why can't you just do this nullification? Why do I have to search my house? So we're worried that the person, first of all, he might not nullify with his whole heart. It's not wholehearted. He'll say, you know, listen, I have this whole liquor closet. I'm nullifying, but you know, I'll make a l'chaim after Pesach. Like, he's not real about it. If he is real, it would be fine. So the rabbi said, no. This nullification theoretically works if you're real about it. But who knows if you'll be real about it? Who knows? So we can't just leave it that way. We have to also clean this. Also, a person can make a mistake. He can find something really good, box of Entenmann somehow, some way he lost out on, and here he is, and he's for a minute, he's like thinking about it. Wait, should I? Shouldn't I? Should I eat it? And maybe he'll forget. He'll eat it. Who knows what will happen? So the nullification didn't help him too much, right? He didn't search his house. He found Entenmann. He loves Entenmann. And who knows what? He finished. He messed up. So what do I do now? So therefore, you have to also clean your house. So in terms of the Hasidut, this is very, very important. Because we have to know, if I nullify the bad, the chametz, the leaven, the arrogance, the lack of simplicity in the emunah, it's not mine anymore. Goodbye. It's not me. It's not mine. Nothing to do with anything. That's what the Varish heard like years ago. He said this beautiful idea. He said, listen, if you, the HR hates dealing with people because we have it so easy. He said, you go to some bris, no more avers. Yom Kippur, no more avers. And like, it's very hard. Like, tshuva, no more avers. I'm like, come on. So the best thing is give up. If you give up, then he won. And this is really Rav Nassim also, he said in a very beautiful way. So the best thing is he wants you just to give up. Because if you don't give up, it'll all work out. You'll deal with him. But better you give up, then we're okay. So we have to be the opposite. We say, this is tshuva, this is batel. Goodbye. The tshuva, it's over. So tshuva works. Tshuva is very powerful. Tshuva makes a person renewed and totally, totally different. That's what tshuva is. I just have to nullify the best. This is not me. This is not what I want. There's a story through Baruch Bear.
Go ahead.
No, I'll tell afterwards. Listen.
What in some? Let's see if I have to ask it the right way. I've never heard. I don't even know if it's possible for a rabbi to say, no Jew now has chametz in his house for the next 7 or 8 days. I'm accepting upon myself all the chametz in a Jewish home in the world. And if you have any, it's just not yours. It all belongs to whatever. So, I mean, I've heard people do that when they forget what the bracha is. There's a bracha if you forget to put away an egg and a piece of
tefillin,
you make it for the whole community.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard rabbis do that, but can a rabbi do that for chametz? I've never heard it, so I guess.
Okay, there, it's like this.
Yeah.
It's not laudable to do that for chametz because I shouldn't take on someone's chametz. I'm not allowed to have it. There were great people. There were great people who. I mean, they could feel the chametz and they found the chametz. That was like really, it's here, it's there, it's this, it's that. It's like unbelievable. There was even Rebbe. He had to check on top. He had his grandfather clock that was maybe 12 feet high or something. Way up. You can't even reach it. He said, go up. Bring a ladder. Go climb up there. What are you, like this gigantic edifice? Who's going to put something up there? And he found someone had wrapped. He used to give out challah. It was in the room where he did his tish. And someone had taken his challah. During the tish, it was very, you know, someone had climbed up there. And he got a challah and left it there. It's a whole big roll. So that was the one year he ever said check there. I mean, like, so there are people who knew Ravari Bells also. I mean, there were certain tzaddikim who they were busy making sure there's no chametz. They're making sure that you're able to get rid of your chametz. And they were tzaddikim were able to do that. That's pretty amazing. But to take on the chametz is not so simple. I mean, there were those who took on averus. Your averus are my, it's all my problem. You know, someone's Zalman Orbach, actually, one time. Henoch Teller told him, I made Kiddush again for a guest that stragglers came to my house. And then I noticed as they took off the cross, I don't know, remember who, which one of the guests had a cross. I was like, are you Jewish? No, none of them are Jewish. Like, oh, no. She's like, well, you know, he didn't say anything, but you're not like a bracha. They really got messed up. She really got messed up about this. So, he went to Shlomo Zalman Orbach, what do I do? He said, I'll take on the sin, but you take on to make a brachas, so now I'm going to like, try to make good brachas. That was so there were people who said after the fact, it's on me, it's okay, but it's not so simple to, that's a big responsibility.
He couldn't know. I mean, they were hiding in cross.
Huh? No. I agree with you, it wasn't something. So, Rav Nosson says that when you really, really connected, you don't mess up even if you didn't know. That's what a shogi gives. I mess up Shabbos. I forget Shabbos. Or I forget this is also Shabbos. I forgot. So why do I have to make a sacrifice? What do I do? What did I do wrong? I forgot. Everyone forgets. Hashem made us forgetful beings. So if you're really connected, Shabbos you can't forget. Impossible. That's the bottom line. So I lost my connection there for a minute, so I lost that. So then I began to sacrifice for that. So that's what I must explain. So therefore, I guess at his level, he didn't want to mess up that way. There's a story of the Rebbe Bezhebush. He once backed into a lamp. Sastram, whatever his hat, banged into this lamp on Shabbos. And it started to vibrate a little bit back and forth. When he saw that, he caused the lamp that was muksa to move. Again, he didn't touch it with his hands by accident. That's not even shogi. He didn't make a mistake. He just, from heaven, they didn't guard him from banging into it. He fainted. So he woke up, the chassidim were like, what's the big deal? I mean, it's misasik. You know, if you were facing it, you didn't mean it to happen. And that's like nothing. He said, when you're where I am, something like that is very, 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 like, shakes you up if you're in a very high place. And the Gemara tells about, who was it? They wanted to wake up, they wanted to go to Rishmol Kongodl to ask on high if the 10 people they were decreed against had to die or not. So they took something that was the slightest question, Amara, that was the slightest question, and they dropped it on him. He was like in the highest world, they couldn't wake him up. They dropped on something which, it wasn't even defiled, it was a question of whether it's a slight or big defilement or not. And the thing touching it for sure couldn't impart any defilement. Maybe it come from, dropped on him, he's back. He's all the way down. Bye. He said, that's when you're on the level, then any little thing makes a difference to you. So I guess that's how he felt. I don't know. For me, I wouldn't let it bother me at all. You're right. I wouldn't. But okay. It is Baruch Hashem. Adarab, like the Kurd says, the Pinchavi Kurd says, he said, when you mess up, that's good, because it gets rid of your arrogance. Now you can't be arrogant. He's always happy. Ah, another chunk of lies thrown away. I'm not, it's just you. I'm not, I messed up. Fine. Thank you. And further. That was the message. That's what I was taught. Like the Chassidim, that's what very much, very different streams of Chassidim, that's what they do.
What were you saying before with the Yitzhahara doesn't like dealing with people because we can always do tshuva?
Yeah, we do tshuva and then it's over. Rav Nosson really says it. Rav Arsh said it in his very beautiful way. Because bittel, I'm just saying that the bittel of the chametz, yeah. Nullifying the chametz here, we're talking about here, I nullify, I say it's not mine. It's like dirt. I mean, so what? Chametz represents the Yitzhahara, that's what the Medrash says. Even the slightest amount, we're not allowed to have, but if we mevatlet, it doesn't exist. I don't care how much chometz you kilu have. And really, I didn't explain enough, maybe. Every person has an neshama, his neshama is pure. He's totally pure. So it doesn't matter how much chometz you have. Like, you get rid of it, but again, you have to be sincere. You can't say, oh, well, then pass another cheeseburger, and then I'll do tshuva, and it'll be okay. No, don't take the cheeseburger. Don't insult your friend. Don't all the, which is the other spiritual cheeseburger. You know, whatever the different things you do, every person has different challenges. Don't get angry and I don't know what. Don't indulge in who knows what. And don't do this, don't do that. Don't, I don't know, whatever it may be. and you know, do tshuva later. You know, so he says, ah, so I'll plan my trip to Club Med and I'll do tshuva later. No, don't do that. That's a bad that's a big mistake. But on the other hand, I have to know that after I had, God forbid, fell wherever I fell, I'd have to just nullify it. It's not such a big job. That's how Rav Nassim explained also. There's a bechina that tshuva, when you do tshuva, you just have to say, I wish I hadn't done it. The Rav Chaim Volozhin also says in Kessler Rosh, tshuva medin, the Gemara is easy. Tshuva for the Gemara is very easy. Just say, I don't want to do it. It's over. Not the Rama. The Rama is completion of tshuva. Real tshuva, complete. The complete level of tshuva is all the different steps. But if you just don't want to do it, that's already a level of tshuva. It's not nothing. Rav Nassim says, you have to keep doing tshuva until you finally get a real tshuva. But that's also a tshuva. It's also a certain way. It's nullified because I don't want it. That the Zohar says, for the tshuva, he says, Hashem, I don't want this, take this away. So it's like, it's as if a person went to the king, and the king said, hey, he tells the king, listen, this is what I did. This is how I messed up. This is where I failed. And then the accuser comes, hey, he did this. The king says, yeah, I know. It's already no big deal. Because you turn to the king, you said, but you did a real tshuva, you did all the different steps. No, you just did some bechina vidu, you said, I'm sorry, I wish I hadn't done this. That's how you feel. That's already a level of tshuva. That's already excellent. That's already what we're trying for. So I'll just tell the story of the Baruch Be'er. I was telling before that Baruch Be'er, during World War I, his yeshiva had to move from the city they were in. It was dangerous for the yeshiva. He left with him. His parents were the elderly, and they said, no, we're going to stay wherever we'll be. We don't want to go. It's too hard for us to move. So he comes back. His father's not feeling so well. His father's quite ill. And he's serving his father, trying to help him. He's hardly sleeping. Always with his father, davening, Hashem should help. And his family gets worried. Here he is, a very important Rosh Yeshiva. Very beautiful, sensitive person. And, like, he's not sleeping at all. An hour, 2 hours, he falls over. Like, it's very dangerous for him. So he said, listen, we don't want you to get into this breakdown. Take one night off. You'll have your most devoted student there. You'll sleep a good night. Finally, they prevailed on him. He slept that night. That night, his father passed away. And he was devastated. If only I'd been there davening, maybe another day, maybe. Levaya, Shiva, nothing's helping. Tell the Chabad Chaim, listen, it's all fair. It's like, Mom, he's not telling you, saying Shurim, he can't do anything. So Chabad Chaim said, send him to me. So he sent him to him. Chaim took him by the hand. He said, Shuva is like a person is newly born. There's no history anymore. Not if I wouldn't have, that's tshuva. That's what tshuva is. So he felt very refreshed by it. He felt very, so okay, whatever, that's tshuva. You don't devastate, you don't stop, you don't despair, you do tshuva, and it's over. So it's the same thing, when I say I'm getting rid of the chametz, it's the same thing, all the bad, the negativity, all the evil, all the foolish, all these things, all these avarice, I'm getting rid of. I'm disassociating myself from them, I don't want them, I'm not interested in them. That's what I'm doing, that's the beginning of a very high tshuva. Person burning the chametz, he's got to burn away his. I want to burn away all the nonsense. I don't want all this stuff. I want Hashem. I want to leave Mitzrayim finally. Let me get out. I want to get out. Free me. Let us, please. Hashem isn't freeing us because we're not asking. We're not interested. That's very sad. Person says, actually, I'm quite comfortable where I am right now. Maybe I'm suffering. Okay, so I'm suffering. Everyone suffers. Well, why should you stay there? Why stay there? Why not leave the suffering and just I don't want it. I'm interested. Put Hashem in my life in a good, sweet way, not in a bad way, not pressure, not just happy, just yearning. So that's the connection between Vittel and Averis and getting June Tshuva. Do another one. Stop.
Can I ask a question about?
You can ask anything you want, and Tshuva.
Well, it's about the comments that we have in the pots, and there's no gay after. Let me understand.
We'll get there.
Okay.
I think so.
Okay.
Little bit.
You have time now. We have
that's the question that we have. That's where we're holding.
I had a friend who was worked as a lecturer for discovery seminars.
Uh-huh.
He was a physicist at Johns Hopkins University.
Mm-hmm. Well.
And he was one of these like science and religion kind of guys. And he had a proof for what you said, that whatever you do makes a difference.
Uh-huh.
There's a proof in physics for that.
Really?
Yeah. And you don't even have to be around it or have to see it or anything. Because the question is, if a leaf falls from a tree 6,000 miles away from where you're standing, does it make a difference? And it does. And he proves that.
Wow.
So if you're actually doing something like a mitzvah, even more so, because you're seeing it, you're feeling it, you're having all these experiences around it. It's not like a leaf falling from a tree to the ground where you don't see it, you just know that it makes a difference. So this is much more illustrative of what we do.
Wow.
Very beautiful. So Solanta would say one Jew stays away from Lashon Hara in Lithuania, and another Jew doesn't marry out of the faith in Paris. That's what he would say. Exactly.
Right,
he says there are deep repercussions spiritually which we can't begin to understand. Because we're all really connected on a deep level. Rabbi Nachman says when you're someone of your source, when I go up, I help him up too. That's how it works. So it's like if something is really, it's an immediate, direct thing. But it's hard, like, it's hard for us to see it, you know.
My Mendel Weinbach was the mayor.
Uh-huh.
I always said that. If you're learning Torah in the base, they're just going to stop an intermarriage in America. You're Torah right now, you're a rookie.
But we still want to say.
That's the source.
Yep. I mean, there's a lot of sources, but he's the one who said that particular expression. Torah or not speaking with Torah, doing something. So his angle was more Musar, ethics, change of character. So he was doing his own, he was explaining in his own way. But he was why the Chabad Chaim wrote the Sefer Lishmos Haloshim on slander. He one time went to visit Rishol Solanta. And Rishol Solanta, he first heard a lecture. And Rishol Solanta said, somebody should really write a book about the laws of forbidden speech. And then the Chabad Chaim went to speak with him, and he kind of indicated that my feeling is, young man, he's 20, I think, 20. He's like, I don't think you need me at all. There's no reason for you to be here. You just do your thing. Don't come back. And the Chabad Chaim went and wrote that book. We can't begin to understand Chabad Chaim. He comes in, his mother's crying. He's back from yeshiva. His father had been in Volozhin, one of the real powerful yeshivas, and then passed away, and his mother remarried someone a little more simple, or maybe a lot more simple. And he said, what's the matter? Why are you crying? She said, my husband now said that he has a daughter, and he said, if you don't marry his daughter, he's going to divorce me. She said, what's the big deal? I'll marry her, no problem. He's a big learner. He could have gotten a big, great shidduch. He didn't care. What do you mean? He said, Hashem wants to marry her, no problem. That's pretty great. That's a pretty amazing. Yeah. But now, one of the children or grandchildren from her survived the war. Nobody. Only the second marriage. And the second marriage, she said, you're already older. I forgot how old he was. She said, I want to have children. He said, I guarantee your children. And those were the only children that died. So the only children that survived. Nobody else. The rest of them all. But it's not simple. Not so simple. Shem Yazor. I don't know whether to continue.
I just wanted to share one other thing that shows you.
Kosher?
Have a dead bird.
Kosher?
Kosher?
Huh?
Save you the road.
What?
How's
the meal?
Well, I thought they were giving out meat or whatever Monday and Wednesday.
So, this is additional. The meat was given out last week.
Right.
Okay. Next week is other stuff.
Okay.
Great. Show me how to
So, this is a 45-year story that actually happened to me. So it took place over 45 years.
Wow.
And you just happened to remind me of it again today. So I thought it's worthwhile.
You got to eat breakfast.
Because
you're in Israel.
45 years ago, my oldest son was born. And he was born 1 week after my father was niftar. So I went to arrange for the bris, and I wanted to arrange for the bris. So I called up an Orthodox moral, and he said, how much can you afford to pay? That was his first question. I said, well, I'm in college. My wife and I are both in college. We're both students. So we don't have anything to pay you with, maybe just a few dollars, but, He says, well, that won't be enough. He said, do you have a grandparent who's coming? Does your wife have a father who's going to be there? And I said, yes. He says, I'll collect from him. So I said, no, I don't want you. Already I don't feel good about you. You're not coming. So then I went to this Reform rabbi who I knew, and I said, can you recommend somebody? So he recommended a moil. The guy came. He was very nice, and whatever I gave him, he took. And he was a firm guy, just a modern, more modern firm, not really old, world firm. So a little while later, I don't know how little, but it had to be within the next 5 years, this moil called me that asked me how much I could afford to pay, whatever, you know, he wanted to negotiate the price. And he says, I made a big error. It's terrible. He said, will you forgive me? And I said, no. I said, I felt that you did a terrible thing. And I think that, you know, it's not so easy. You can ask for forgiveness. I mean, how many brisim were you asked to do that you didn't do? I don't even want to know. Just rhetorically, in my own mind. You know, because of that question. So, on behalf of me and everybody else that maybe is out there, no, I'm not going to forgive you. All right? So, I was always bothered by that. And then actually years later I tried to find him, but I couldn't find him. I don't know whether he was alive or dead, whatever. So then this son who's now 45, he had a son. All right? And the about 15 years ago, he had a son. And the Moyle, he interviewed Moyle. And he found this nice guy that he liked. He said, oh, this is the party Moyle. Everybody likes this. They come, they have a laugh, he's entertaining, he's this, he's that. And so he's going to be, and I said, fine. So then my son calls me before the bris, and he says, Dad, this Moyle cannot do the bris. He said, there's a complication. He does not know how to do the bris. This does not have to fix it. So I called him. I was living in Baltimore, so I got a hold of the Moyle in Baltimore, who was all over the world for problem brisim. And he talked to the Moyle in Cleveland, and he said, okay, I know how to do this. It's not a problem. For me, it's not a problem. For this guy, who's not doing them all the time, it's a problem. Because he's a celebrity guy. You know? I'm the real thing.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
So he... so he said, I'm willing to go there to Cleveland for free to do it, just so it's done right. I'll pay everything. If you can reimburse me for the airfare, it'd be nice, but if not, don't worry about it. So my son said, no, I don't know this guy. As far as I'm concerned, this celebrity guy, Moyle, he's good enough for me. And so he had the bris, and the Moyle at the bris didn't say a word, but he told my son afterwards, I couldn't do the whole thing. I want you to know, I didn't want to hurt the child. I didn't want to make the baby suffer. I knew I couldn't do this correctly. So he said, I did a little bit, that I was positive, was okay, but I wasn't going to do any more because I didn't want to make a mistake.
Okay.
So then...
That's a bigger mistake.
Sorry about it.
So then the... so then a few years pass, and now I have another grandson who's going to have a bris. And by this time, my son has moved on in his life, and he has a guy who is like the Moyle of Cleveland. Mm-hmm. Young, funny guy, and he comes, and I told him the story of the first child. He said, don't worry, I get these all the time. I can handle this one. He says, we'll go into the hospital. He says, for the older child, and we'll take care of it, do it the right way, so there's no problem. My son was okay with that. He explained everything to him. And this guy was also very entertaining. And
he was like a black beard. Like tall with a black beard.
Yeah, right, skinny guy, yeah. Were you from
out?
Cleveland? Yeah.
Yeah.
You from Cleveland?
Yeah.
Okay. It's a big rabbinical family in Cleveland. So then the rabbi says to him, says, do you know what your son did recently? I said, no. She said, well, you two had a discussion. And because of your discussion that you had, you said your son went around to, he told me, he said, your son went around to, he wanted to send his kid to religious school, something. Not a day school, but religious school. He said, everywhere he went, he wanted to, you have to join the shul, you have to join the building fund, you have to do this, you have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
He said, and he didn't like the curriculum either.
Mm-hmm.
He said, so he called me up, and he said, would you be willing to start a religious school?
Uh-huh.
Kids that are like me. And he said, we invited 60 people. He said, three people came to the organizing, and we started it. He said, because of your discussion. So I'm thinking that this all started with this Moyle who said,
mm-hmm.
It's funny how things,
interesting.
Go forward.
Shem Yazor. Shreinu, Shreinu.
I have no idea.